You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
Having a hard time finding your favorite show on shortwave or satellite? The Christian Media Newspaper now provides program guides to all the top Christian, patriot, and alternative radio programs. Four times a year, they print an updated shortwave and satellite program guide. Christian Media is $20 per year and includes news and interviews on Christian books, video, music, and broadcasting. Subscribe now and receive a free Christian music compact disc with your paid order. To subscribe to Christian Media or receive more information, call 520-333-4578. Once again, to subscribe to Christian Media or receive more information, call 520-333-4578. That's 520-333-4578. Call now.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a nonprofit community service.
You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, I just received my copy of Relevance magazine today. And I'm going to read it to you. As always, it's right on target. And while it was written just a short time ago, it was before my friend Phil O'Halloran realize that the McVeigh verdict would be rendered today. Nevertheless, he's right on target, as always. For those of you who have not heard, Timothy J. McVeigh was found guilty on all 11 charges just around 12:30 this afternoon, Mountain Standard Time, in the federal courthouse in Denver, Colorado. And that was not unexpected. Those of us who watched the trial quickly realized that Stephen Jones was not defending Timothy McVeigh. And don't get me wrong, I'm not sticking up for the guy. What I'm trying to stick up for is our legal process and the constitutionally protected rights, and the right to a fair trial, and the right to a defense. And when they tell you what you can and what you cannot present as a defense, and tell you that you can't talk about some subjects and you can't call these witnesses, ladies and gentlemen, you don't have a defense. You see, if your life is on the line in court, you should be able to call anybody that you want. You should be able to talk about anything that you want. You should be able to present any defense that you have. And while I sincerely believe that Timothy McVeigh was involved in the destruction of the Alfred P. Mira Federal Building in Oklahoma City, I do not think that he got a fair defense. I also do not think that the other culprits who were involved in this were brought out. In fact, I know they weren't. And I know that that's by intent. Now they have a man who's been convicted of one of the most heinous crimes in the history of America, and he has a sentencing date coming up. Here's what's going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. They're going to put pressure on this guy, and they're going to tell him that they might give him life without parole instead of a death sentence if he'll roll over and rat on his fellow bombers. Will he or won't he? Well, I don't know. And I don't think anybody else does either. So let's just get on with this episode of The Hour of the Time, and we'll find the answer to these questions, I'm sure, in the coming months and years. So hold on to your hats. I'll be right back after this very short pause.
Indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands. One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag is a pledge to the ideals of our forefathers, the men who fought and died in the building of this great nation. It's a pledge to fulfill our duties and obligations as citizens of the United States, and to uphold the principles of our Constitution. And last but not least, it's a pledge to maintain the four great freedoms cherished by all Americans. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States.
Is it really, folks? Liberty and justice for all? Well, if you believe that, you really haven't been paying much attention. Do you think that if you were accused of murder, you could have hired the lawyers that O.J. Simpson hired? Do you think that your trial would have gone on as long as O.J. Simpson's trial went on? Do you think the nation would be as concerned about whether or not you were innocent or guilty as they were about O.J. Simpson? You think Timothy McVeigh got a fair trial in the press or in the courtroom? Do you know anything about his lawyer that was court-appointed? See, if Timothy McVeigh had been very wealthy, he could have hired the very best attorneys in the land. Whether he's guilty or innocent, I'm not talking about that. He was, in fact, found guilty today by a jury of his peers, and I believe in that kind of system, and from the evidence and the defense and the prosecution that was presented in court, they brought back a guilty verdict on all 11 counts. But you see, if Timothy McVeigh had been rich, very wealthy — there's nothing wrong with being rich or wealthy, but there is something wrong with our justice system — he could have hired the best attorneys in the nation, and that verdict might not have been guilty. Ladies and gentlemen, even if he was guilty. His lawyer, Mr. Jones, is a very well-known defense attorney for communists in this nature. Stephen Jones is a communist. The Alfred P. Muir Federal Building was blown up by communists and socialists to bring about the passage of anti-terrorism legislation and the disarmament of the American people. All that they were interested in was a patsy. The press crucified and convicted Timothy McVeigh long before he ever came to trial. So the concept that a citizen is innocent until proven guilty in this country is no more. Most of you fell victim to that. You just knew he was guilty when the truth was that you didn't know anything about him. All you knew is what you read in the communist news networks and the papers and the 6 o'clock Dan Blather report. That's all you knew. And why am I saying this? I'm saying this because that's the whole subject of Relevance Magazine, this issue. And listen carefully. I think that you're going to all of a sudden feel ashamed of yourselves, some of you. Others will gleefully pat yourself on the back and say, I knew it, I knew it. And those of us who have been telling you this for years, it's old hat to us, so it's really not much to me, but maybe to you. This issue is called The Truth Steps Out, The End of Blind Trust in the Media. Relevance Magazine, published by the Relevance Corporation, headed by the editor and my good friend Philip M. O'Halloran, associate editor Charles Bennett. Regular subscription is $110, and I'm going to give you the number right now. You can call to subscribe if you wish. It's worth it. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, it's worth every penny of it. 1-800-626-8944. That's 1-800-626-8944, and I'll give that out to you later. Again, reading between the lies. In the last 30 reports, Relevance has assembled massive documentation proving the cold, hard reality of much of what mainstream media organs dismiss as paranoid conspiracy theories. During the course of our research over the past 3 years, we have made a few observations about what ails the all-important Fourth Estate. In this, our 31st issue, we plan to depart from our usual format of in-depth reporting and analysis and provide a broader retrospective of the atrocious track record compiled by the major media in its irresponsible coverage of a number of vitally important stories regarding corruption and, yes, conspiracy in the United States government. Mark Twain once said, quote, "A lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is putting on its shoes," end quote. Well, over the last several months, the truth has gotten up, dressed itself, and taken its first steps into the light of day. Whether or not federal and media sharpshooters gun it down before it gets any further is the proverbial $64,000 question. In the last few months, an interesting phenomenon has unfolded. Whether it is the Chinese fundraising scandal, the criminally sloppy FBI crime lab, or the latest revelations on the Gulf War chemical weapons exposure, the truth is busting out all over as the weight of official lies are collapsing that house of cards known as public trust. It seems that many of the most sacred lies propagated by the establishment media are being reluctantly, if timidly, exposed by elements within the media itself. Although the familiar cone of silence still mutes media organs on stories most dangerous to the ruling elite, we have nevertheless witnessed an increase in the level of exposure of the type of news previously deemed unfit to print. But has the dominant media been seized by sudden desire to print the truth out of a newfound sense of duty to its customers and to truth itself? Or is it because too many adults in the crowd have joined the little boy in exclaiming, "The emperor isn't wearing any clothes"? Humorist Goodman Ace told us to try to read between the lies. With a little help from the budding independent press, more Americans are doing just that. A rational survey released in February by the Roper Center for Public Opinion Research in conjunction with the Arlington, Virginia-based Freedom Forum and Newsim showed that while 21% of Americans believe all of what they are told by a minister, priest, or rabbi, only 5% admitted to similar trust in network, TV, news anchors, and a laughable 2% said the same thing about newspaper reporters. When respondents, 70% of whom said they read a local paper several times a week, were asked about the ethical standards of these and other groups, only 2% of newspaper reporters and a barely detectable 1% of TV reporters were rated very high compared to the clergy, which received the top rating of all groups at 21%. Although they weighed in at a dismal 2%, lawyers and politicians managed to rate higher on ethical standards than the used car salesman of the 90s, the TV reporter. The survey's summary concluded flatly, quote, "Most people do not trust journalists," end quote. As we pointed out in our June-July 1995 double issue, Mass Media Meltdown, the tunnel visionaries of today's National Press Corps have long been engaged in the unwitting self-destruction of their own credibility. Judging from the results of the Roper Center survey, that demolition is almost complete. Yet the media continues to sell advertising space and subscriptions in record pace. NFL's Super Bowl advertising, which last year cost upwards of $2 million per minute, has been shown to have little effect on product revenue, but the advertisers themselves continue to bid for the space, stumping the savviest of cost-conscious MBAs. Now, if 98 out of 100 people don't believe what they read in the Times and posts of the print medium, what are those publications accomplishing? What has been cynically but accurately dubbed infotainment may not be believed, but there remains a strong market for it. Between the airbrushed Calvin Klein advertisements and sterilized news coverage, which strokes the arrogance of the readers, lies a very big business. Rupert Murdoch, who scans his News Corp annual report and finds that one of his most lucrative properties is TV Guide, is not likely to lose sleep over this issue of relevance. Nor, ladies and gentlemen, the hour of the time, for that matter. You may lose sleep. And your numbers are increasing. What's more, the apathetic and distracted numbers of people tend to be less active in the political process. Thus, the manipulation of their opinion grants less power to the manipulator than does the conquest of those who do participate. And this latter group is beginning to trust the rising independent print media, which is being propagated to deeper and broader audiences with the help of their powerful brethren in talk radio. Give myself a little hand there, and a little hand for Veritas newspaper, which is alternate print media. Independent print media, and to our new organization, the Independent Press Club, which will be announced within the next few days. The tide is turning away from standard who, what, when, where coverage and toward explanations of the motivations and agendas driving current events. Why is becoming the hot issue for the sleeping giant of a public emerging from its long coma of complacency? And if we're not mistaken, Dan Rather, Peter Jennings, and Tom Brokaw are beginning to squirm. C-SPAN recently broadcast a meeting between Ted Koppel and the fringe media after he was hammered with information exposed in the independent press that big media had ignored. Koppel retreated to the excuse that the alternative press was better suited than the mainstream for in-depth investigative reporting. Can you imagine that? Well, it's nonsense. Although he's correct in admitting that the independent media does a much better job at investigative reporting, big media is in a far better position to find and disseminate the truth. Although the internet is playing the role of equalizer, the major networks still have massive budgets, huge electronic files, and reporters who fly across the country for interviews that will yield 10 seconds of airtime. Thus, the major media do not eschew honest investigative reporting because of any inherent inability to investigate, but because it no longer has a reason to do so. Instead of actually spending money and effort and taking risks investigating actual cases of high-level corruption and conspiracy in government, they can simply hire a few ambitious journalistic prostitutes to put down such noisome stories as the product of paranoid conspiracism, whatever that is, or the delusions of right-wing wackos. It takes up less print space. It's a lot cheaper, and it's less likely to result in a punitive IRS audit, withdrawal of access to inside information, or other bureaucratic retaliation. In addition, there has never been any need to worry about these revelations coming out in the so-called competition within the unofficial cartel known as big media. And there's an editor's note here. Can anyone detect a significant difference in the coverage of the three major networks' nightly news programs? The potential for true competition lies in the expanding independent media and the internet, which are threatening to relegate the establishment media to their well-earned place of irrelevance. Sadly, the gradual, decades-long process of intellectual anesthetization and opinion molding has produced a highly suggestible and subtly brainwashed populace. I call them the sheeple. But the latter still retains enough cynicism to avoid swallowing the most preposterous of government con jobs. For instance, the Vince Foster suicide comes immediately to mind. Not so with the opinion controllers in the dominant media, whose rank and file are such masters of self-deception, that they are willing and able to embrace and valiantly defend any official government line, no matter how hysterical. The Flight 800 mechanical failure hypothesis and the single bomb, single bomber explanation of Oklahoma City spring to mind. Any cursory investigation and interrogation of the many witnesses involved in both will tell you that Flight 800 was shot down by a missile and that there were more than one bomb, possibly more than two or three, involved in the destruction of the Alfred P. Mura Federal Building, and there were as many as five or six or seven John Does other than Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols. One of the most irresponsible and pat rejections of conspiracy theory is the major media's unquestioning acceptance of the government's account of what happened at Waco, Texas on April 19, 1993. Now, even this vicious lie is being convincingly exposed. And by an independent filmmaker who formerly worked as a newsman for CNN, Dan Gifford and his wife Amy have produced a stunning documentary, which premiered in January at Robert Redford's internationally renowned Sundance Film Festival in Utah. It's entitled Waco, The Rules of Engagement, and it includes footage of the forward-looking infrared, known as FLIR footage, shot from an FBI spy plane circling overhead at the time of the fatal fire on April the 19th. The footage was obtained by attorneys for the surviving Davidians for use in their trial over 2 years ago. Waco features the analysis of undisputed FLIR expert Edward Allard, who holds a Ph.D. in physics a former supervisor at the Department of Defense's Night Vision Lab at Fort Belvoir, Virginia. Allard examines the footage, pointing out what he contends are the unmistakable FLIR images of muzzle flashes from the machine guns of federal agents. He illustrates the FLIR evidence that FBI agents gunned down Davidians fleeing the burning building on its blind side where no reporters or cameras were allowed. This film is devastating. The documentary also features accounts by fire safety experts who explained how tanks systematically punched large holes at strategic points in the structure. The holes enabled the prevailing winds of up to 40 miles per hour to rush through the building, propelling the FBI's flammable concoction of CS gas and tear gas throughout the structure like a raft on the Colorado River. The building was literally destroyed in minutes. Like the Waco incident and the excellent 51 Days, this film adds to the growing weight of evidence which is exposing the government's official story for the lie that it is. Waco, The Rules of Engagement, is currently being shown in limited release at film festivals and other venues across the country. Predictably, although the producers have offered copies to major television news outlets across the country, thus far, none of them have broadcast it. None of them are interested. None of them want to distribute this excellent film to movie theaters. And so it's showing at independent movie theaters here and there across the nation. Those interested in seeing the Giffords' work should contact local theaters and film societies and ask them to air the film or show it in your local theater. Information on upcoming showings will be given out on the air on this broadcast tomorrow on the Hour of the Time. Right-wing fringe groups, and he says this tongue-in-cheek, whenever he says fringe groups are right-wing or any of these things, he's got quotation marks around them, and he's saying it tongue-in-cheek. He's parroting the Communist News Networks is what he's doing. Right-wing fringe groups first began to sound the alarm when federal agents killed two members of the Randy Weaver family. After first killing his dog, U.S. Marshals shot Randy Weaver's son, Sammy, in the back. Then after surrounding his home, pursuant to unprecedented orders to shoot to kill anyone with a gun, the FBI turned a sniper's rifle on his wife, Vicky, shooting her in the face as she stood in the doorway, armed only with her six-month-old infant, Elisheba. With the important exceptions of shortwave radio and a handful of AM stalwarts like Mark Scott of Detroit's WXYT, the truth about what was happening on Ruby Ridge was nowhere to be found. I was there in Waco, Texas, broadcasting from the scene. And when I warned the nation, ladies and gentlemen, that if we didn't stop what was happening right then and there, all of those people were going to be murdered. That very night, they burned down the radio station that broadcast my show, The Hour of the Time. The government paid $3 million to the surviving daughters after what Time magazine is still referring to as the botched raid. Time, April 2nd, 1997. The major media invariably uses these tempering statements even when there is clear evidence of deliberate wrongdoing. The head of FBI headquarters, Violent Crime and Major Offenders Section, E. Michael Cahoe, recently pled guilty to obstruction of justice and the destruction of an internal report which exposed the FBI's Washington supervisor's fateful directive to change the decades-long FBI rules of engagement. But when the truth finally surfaced, there were no mea culpas from the media. Missing also were any soul-searching postmortems on their botched coverage of the wrenching tragedy. like the internal report Cahoe destroyed. If any existed, someone made sure they never made it to the newsstand. And of course, when Randy Weaver was acquitted of all of the charges that prompted all of this, you didn't see any coverage of that on the 6 o'clock news either. After the hours and hours and hours and hours of condemning him and his family as white supremacist, terrorist, right-wing, blah, 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 etc. ad nauseum. When Arkansas state troopers like L.D. Brown came forward in 1995 and in sworn testimony stated that Bill Clinton knew about and refused to stop the importation of cocaine into this country through the airport at MENA, and that Clinton knew it was his friend and campaign contributor Dan Lassiter's deal, the major media held its tongue, printing not one word about the bombshell story. Of course, it would have been difficult for even the most adept media smear tacticians to get away with the usual conspiracy theory attack strategy. That's because they would have had to advance their very own conspiracy theory to explain why it is that so many Arkansas state troopers who were former close friends and or bodyguards of Bill Clinton were conspiring to tell corroborating lies about him. Lies that just happened to fit neatly into the vast mountain range of evidence pointing to the Clinton drug connection. It seems that some stories are simply too dangerous to allow into the public domain in any form whatsoever. See relevant September 1996. Let's take a little short break. Let you catch your breath. I know some of this is a little shocking, isn't it? I'll be right back after this short pause.
Thank you.
William Cooper, and you're listening to the Hour of the Time. And in case you're wondering what we're doing today, I'm reading the latest issue of Relevance Magazine, edited by my good friend Philip M. O'Halloran. He sends me a copy every issue, and I also send him a copy of Veritas every issue when it comes out also. We're talking about the inability of the Communist News Networks, as I call them, the discredited established media, the great apologists for socialism, can't print the truth. One of the reasons that such stories are spiked is that no journalist reaches the rank of editor without achieving a keen sense of what is safe to print and what is verboten. It is the rare newsman indeed who strays outside these well-circumscribed boundaries of acceptable thought. Gary Webb and his editors at the San Jose Mercury News, who provided new evidence of the CIA cocaine-contra connection last fall, are members of this lonely group. I exposed this in my book years ago, and I learned about it way back in the early 70s as a member of the Office of Naval Intelligence when I was on the intelligence briefing team of the Admiral in command of the Pacific Fleet, CPAC Fleet. After all these years, somebody in the mainstream media, San Jose Mercury News, had the guts to print the same thing that I had revealed many years ago. But you see, there's a big difference between me coming out and talking about it and a major newspaper like the San Jose Mercury News. You see, they paid for their transgression by enduring a vicious nationwide assault by the national, quote, prestige, end quote, press, read Communist News Networks, which threw everything but the facts into a campaign to discredit Webb's work. If anyone dares to make a suggestion that serious crimes by high-ranking federal officials or an agency of government have been committed, that suggestion instantly becomes, almost by definition, a conspiracy theory, which most people believe that by itself is beyond the pale of responsible discussion. You know, sort of like the theory of relativity or the theory of a bacteriological cause for disease. See, all these things are theories. Everything in science is a theory, ladies and gentlemen. A theory, to be a theory, must be based upon fact which leads you to certain conclusions. So why is it that conspiracy theory is ridiculed, but the theory of relativity is not? I'll tell you what it is, ladies and gentlemen. It's brainwashing. It's called stupidity of the sheeple factor. It's caused the inability to use the airspace between the ears for anything other than sniffing roses. Rose being the international symbol of socialism. What the media establishment has succeeded in doing is to effectively remove high-level coordinated corruption in America from the mainstream public debate. How convenient for those guilty of that corruption. They are protected by their media accessories after the fact, who sternly remind us that such things can only happen in theory, and that such theories are always of the conspiracy kind. If the evidence is just too damning to safely employ the conspiracy smear, highly paid federal and media cover-up specialists calmly fall back on that time-honored diversionary tactic, indignantly huffing, "These scurrilous charges of impropriety are politically motivated." In other words, it's just one party making up false charges to gain an advantage over the other. Those providing real evidence of government corruption and those urging its prosecution are then drowned out in the familiar cacophony of political caca. Sanctimonious pleas to end the irresponsible mudslinging and negative politics. Baloney. It's all just baloney pablum for what they call the masses. You know why they call you all the masses instead of people? Because they have no respect for you. Because you buy into their blithering, babbling BS. And so they have no respect for you. They believe that you're just stupid animals, sheep, sheeple. And by golly, over the years, I started out thinking, no, that's not true. Americans are smart. All you got to do is give them some facts and send them to the library and tell them where to get the information, and they'll wise up real quick. Not so, folks. They've convinced me. I know you're sheeple, most of you. It's just a fact of life that I've had to come to grips with. They're right about that. But I don't think they're right that you will always be sheeple. Because, you know, and I may be wrong about this too. I was wrong about the sheeple thing. I may be wrong about this too. See, I have this feeling that you back Americans up against the wall far enough and they're going to come out swinging and they're going to learn what's what and who's who and how to fix it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing all of this because if I didn't believe that, this would all be a waste of time. Total waste of time. Anyone who watches C-SPAN will recognize this scenario. The genial Brian Lamb is hosting a guest reporter from the Big East Coast Daily and his squash partner from the prestigious Washington Monthly. Their impossibly boring discussion of the Dole campaign's attempt to defuse the age issue is interrupted by a caller from Poughkeepsie who wonders whether Vince Foster might have been murdered. There's an embarrassing little short period of silence, and then the two politely hide their disdain for this benighted member of the Buboise and smugly but gently announce in near unison, quote, "Caller, that sounds like some kind of conspiracy theory," end quote. And since the caller, being the sheeple that he is, doesn't have much of a command of the facts and hasn't done any study of the matter, can't come back with anything intelligent, he is left muttering the Casper Milquetoast submission. "Well, I guess you got a point there. Hey, thanks, Brian. Love your show." Mr. Lamb can then move on to Steve in Minneapolis, or Ida in San Antonio. You've all seen it, haven't you? And the millions of uneasy viewers can sigh reassured that the caller's disturbing question was merely a manifestation of uninformed paranoia. But many viewers are still left slightly troubled, since they have been told that it is precisely this kind of paranoia that led to the Oklahoma bombing and other instances of, quote, militia conspiracies to attack and overthrow the federal government, end quote. And he's saying that tongue-in-cheek because there was no militia conspiracy to attack and overthrow the federal government ever. Period. Timothy McVeigh was never involved in a militia. So remember, when he says things like that, or anti-government, or right-wing radicals, he's saying this tongue-in-cheek, parroting the communist news networks, because that's how they describe now people who are loyal to the real government in this country, the Constitution for the United States of America, and the amendments thereto. That is the supreme law of the land. But you wouldn't know it from listening to the media. The reasons why so many people have become, quote, anti-government, end quote, are never given, and it is either directly stated or left for the viewer to infer that they must be of a psychiatric nature, must be some of those constitutionists, patriots. Thanks to the media experts and the unprepared caller from Poughkeepsie, these viewers and most other members of the species, oblivious Americanus, will remain not only unaware, but unaware that they are unaware. To paraphrase Churchill, quote, never in the field of human conversation has so much been suppressed from so many by so few, end quote. Yes. With just six simple words in the English language, quote, we don't subscribe to conspiracy theories, end quote. An information dispensing elite has been able to suppress most objective inquiry into real instances of high-level corruption, outright conspiracy, and even a fair amount of the simple bureaucratic buffoonery that plagues the system. And those six words have worked for decades, and their timely recital and consistent repetition probably advanced the career of many an ambitious young journalist, along with those other derogatory defamations, such as for anyone who criticizes the politics or the goals or the machinations of the State of Israel. Anti-Semitic! Isn't that true? How many of you are terrified of that term? Well, I'm not. I'm not terrified of anything anymore, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing scares me anymore. I'm going to live my life in the truth, whether any of you out there decide to do it or not. I'm going to do it, and I'm teaching it to my children, and hopefully they will do it. If there are just a few of us in this country who can start that kind of thing again, you know, it used to exist here. Maybe some of us or some of our children or grandchildren will have a chance at some kind of a decent future. How many of you can see through the media blackout? Has a more subtly effective form of mass mind control ever been devised? In the great film Citizen Kane, the publisher is asked, but what will the people think? To which he replies, they'll think what I tell them to think. Unfortunately, for today's spinmeisters who mold public opinion in no less arrogant a manner, the erstwhile boundless pliability and gullibility of the American public has been wearing thin of late. And if the Roper Center results are any indication, the American people no longer trust Koppel, Jennings, or Blather, Brokaw, or those nameless communist news network anchors. And as a result, many of them are turning in to more believable alternative sources, such as Relevance magazine, or Veritas newspaper, or the Hour of the Time. You wouldn't believe how many converted ditto heads listen to this broadcast now. In fact, I think old Rush himself would be amazed. Those of us comprising the best of what we like to call the independent media. These new media are generally free of the advertising demands of corporate America. We don't have anybody to answer to. And since they have no money, masters except their readers and a few small advertisers, they can concentrate on the uncomfortable aspects of stories in which General Electric, Procter & Gamble, Exxon, and Coca-Cola have no interest. Stories which, because of their unpleasant implications, are likely to be counterproductive to these corporations. Objectives of selling products to customers who, according to Madison Avenue, buy more when they are in a happy mood. The close and symbiotic relationship between big government and big business naturally produces the shared goal of an increased concentration of power. Power. This leads to economic fascism. Nazis, if you will. An arrangement in which corporations are controlled, but not owned, by their partners in the government. That's what Hitler did. That's what Nazi Germany was all about. That's what's coming, as I have told you over and over and over again, on broadcast after broadcast after broadcast. The New World Order is Nazi. Nazis were socialists. Socialists suck. And that's just simply the truth. They'll suck and suck and suck until you have nothing left. And then they'll give it to everybody who doesn't deserve it. And then everybody will sit back and pretend to work while the big state, socialist big brother, will pretend to pay you. That's really what it's all about. Create a world of victims that have to be taken care of by big brother, upon whom you become dependent. And then, in order to maintain your standard of living in this dependency, you give up your freedoms, your liberties, and anything else that you have to, and you just simply go along to get along. Every time I hear somebody tell me, well, Bill, why don't you just go along to get along? They don't know. They have no idea how close they have just come to getting my fist pushed right through the back of their head and through the wall behind them. I don't know what it is that stops me, but I haven't done it yet. Oh, but I want to. Oh, but I want to. So close. So very, very close. According to the Federal Election Commission's own statistics, incumbents are reelected from the contributions of corporations which routinely donate money to opposing candidates and to both political parties. FEC records prove that challengers are rarely funded by the corporations, and when they are, it tends to be for the purpose of unseating that rarity of rarities, the non-compliant or rebellious incumbent. And so you see, your vote really doesn't count, ladies and gentlemen, even though you may think it does, because you don't get to pick the candidates. They're picked for you, and they're not for you. They're for those who picked them. Then you can vote between their two candidates, and you say, oh, well, my vote counts. I'm going to go vote. I'm going to run right out and vote now. I know that my vote counts, and if this guy gets elected, everything's going to be better. No. It's not how it works, dear sheeple. It's the way it used to work a long time ago, but that's not how it works today. You haven't got a snowball's chance in hell of having your vote count after they have presented you with a choice between their candidates. You can continue to believe that if you want to. I just wouldn't look too closely in my own eyes in the mirror while I was telling that lie, if I were you. Could be a little disconcerting. As the votes on NAFTA and GATT demonstrated, When their constituents and their corporate sponsors are at odds, most congressmen know on which side their bread is buttered and vote the prescribed corporate line. Thus, big business effectively controls both parties, both houses of Congress, and by extension, the White House. And as we've demonstrated in previous issues, the government players, most of whom are veterans of the federal corporate revolving door, ensure that there are enough choking regulations and Byzantine tax arcana to allow only the largest corporations with the most legal and financial resources to navigate these well-laid bureaucratic minefields and to reap the tax avoidance loopholes offered to only the largest firms. This is why the accelerating merger mania in every field of U.S. business continues to swallow up the small firms which form the backbone of the U.S. economy, and they keep passing legislation that makes it more and more difficult for small business and entrepreneurs to even pretend to try to succeed. And all of you who are struggling to maintain and operate a small business know exactly what I'm talking about. We will continue reading the remainder of this article from Relevance Magazine. In fact, it's not the article, it's the whole magazine on tomorrow's broadcast, and I'll also tell you where Waco, the Rules of Engagement, is played. So don't miss tomorrow's episode of The Hour of the Time. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you.
Tomorrow all the things were gone, worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky star to be living here today, but the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American. We're released, I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that fight to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and it can't hurt you today. But there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains from sea to shining sea,
this is the Voice of Freedom. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to subscribe to Relevance Magazine, and I don't get anything out of this, Phil O'Halloran doesn't even know that I'm reading this issue on the air today. But if you'd like to get a subscription, it's $110. Call 1-800-626-